Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Ooh, I'm so excited. Do you know what we're doing today?
Well, I'm pretty sure we're not doing a regular episode.
We're not.
So what are we doing today?
Q&A. It's not Saturday. That's okay, because I'm here with lots of really good information.
Yeah, and I think instead of doing just one, we're going to end up doing two.
A two-parter again.
Yeah.
Fucking New Testament.
It is a bit much.
It's a lot.
You know, there's a lot of things we've got to cover, and a lot of unfortunate social relevance that we have to address.
And history also.
Yes. I shouldn't say unfortunate. It's unfortunate in the way it's being used currently by certain groups of people. How's
the
that?
Right. By the right.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
The right is weaponized.
I was trying to be vague and allow for, you know, others to interpret themselves.
Oh,
but,
I don't believe, you know, in vague.
But yeah.
Cards on the table. The right is weaponizing
those
shit.
Fuckers. You know, the ones that had a UFC fight tonight at the White House.
As we're recording
fucking
this.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And yeah. Anyway, enough about that. So I'm assuming you have some good stuff for us.
You should assume it because I said it. We are covering today Q&A for Matthew, Little Maddie, chapters 14 and 15. And then part two will cover Little Maddie, chapter 16.
All right. Well, you ready to get into this?
I sure as fuck am.
Let's do it.
Okie dokie. All right. We are hopping into the Q&A for Little Maddie, chapters 14 and 15.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
First of all, chapter 14, it needs to be said, is one of the most famous chapters in the Gospel of Matthew.
Okay.
Because it contains the execution of John the Baptist. John the Baptist loses his fucking head.
He does.
Okay.
And I don't feel like I got enough information about John the Baptist.
I don't either, but we'll find out a little bit more, okay? I have some details for you.
All right.
Okay? Yeah. That's why I was excited to hop into this.
Got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
We also get the feeding of the 5,000, which,
right,
that's, you know, huge. Apparently, it was big magic that nobody recorded.
And then forgot later.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
We get Jesus walking on water, which is also a big deal. We get Peter briefly walking on water. A little bit.
Yes.
And then we get more healings and stuff.
Yeah, magic. Okay? Right.
But it's a big deal insofar as this chapter is big news. Okay.
Sure.
It's also a chapter where Matthew emphasizes two specific themes: the political power of Herod versus prophetic truth in John.
Okay,
and I'm going to elucidate on that a little bit.
All right.
Okay, and then we also get fear and doubt versus faith. And both of those are from the disciples.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Those are the two big themes of this chapter.
Okay.
Okay, but before we talk about that, let me reread verses 1 and 2 real quick.
Okay.
Okay? At that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard the reports about Jesus, and he said to his attendants, "Fuck, this is John the Baptist. He has risen from the dead. Fuck, that is why miraculous powers are at work in him. Fuck."
Minus the fuck.
So we've got so much to unload here. First of all, Herod the Tetrarch. We were like, what? What's a Tetrarch?
Sure.
And
well, I know he's not the original Herod.
Right.
So.
And that's something I forgot. This is the son of Herod the Great. And Herod the Great was the guy, remember when Jesus was just not yet born, and then he was being born, and Herod wanted the census. And so Joseph was like, oh, let's settle in this city. Wait, no, let's go to that city instead.
Right, because he was going to kill all the under 2 year olds.
Right, that was that was Herod.
Yeah.
The great, okay? So the Herod, the Tetrarch, this is his son, Herod Antipas.
Okay.
Okay, and also remember when Herod the Great died, he gave land to his three sons?
Yes.
And that's a big deal.
Okay.
Because remember, Joseph settled in one of the, I can't remember which brother, but he settled in one of the brothers that was like less likely to give him up.
Right, right.
Okay. I'm going to guess based on what we find out that it's probably Archelaus, not Philip.
Okay.
Or maybe Philip and not Archelaus is what I meant to say.
Got it.
Okay. But anyway, so we've got Herod Antipas, the son of Herod the Great.
Right.
Okay. And he was the king with the nativity stories. Okay. And the other two, as I said, are Archelaus and Philip. Okay. And that's not extraneous details I'm giving you. This is important.
Okay.
So Herod the Tetrarch is Antipas, and his brothers are Archelaus and Philip.
Got it.
Okay. And Herod and Philip go at it with each other.
Okay.
They are at arms with each other, and it's over a woman. Okay. And it's a big deal.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
But we're not there yet. Okay. We're not there yet. Sure. I just wanted to give you information so that you would understand that I'm not just dropping names to try to like muddy the waters. It actually matters.
Okay.
Okay. But let's talk. What the fuck is a tetrarch?
Sure.
Okay. That word signifies a person who rules over the fourth part of a country. So I was wrong. I thought tetra was three, but it's not. It's four. But because there weren't three sons, they only divided the land into three. So the word became more in a general sense by Jewish writers.
Yeah.
Just to mean, regardless of the number, is just kind of a governor or a king or just a leader, a ruler.
I'm not understanding. Where does the four come in here at all?
Tetrarch used to mean when lands were divided into four pieces.
Okay.
A tetrarch would have been the ruler over a fourth piece.
Okay.
A quarter. A tetrarch was a quarter.
So the word has different meaning. Now, they're using it differently than what it was originally intended for, is what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay. Sorry, I wasn't following what you were getting at there.
Because when we were reading this, I was like, oh, tetra, that must be three. And I'm saying that I was wrong.
Okay.
It was originally four.
Like I said, I just didn't follow. That's all.
Got it. So by Jesus's day, the word had just become, nah, let's not worry about, it's not three. It's not four. It's just a ruler.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
And it's just a general title for a minor regional ruler.
Got it.
And that's what.
To be like a mayor or a governor or something.
More like a governor than a mayor, I would say. Because, again, Herod's land was split into three pieces, of which Herod the Tetrarch Antipas got one.
Right.
Okay. And that's the guy that we're dealing with currently.
Okay,
that's the Herod we're dealing with.
Right.
Okay. So the estates of Herod the Great were not at his death divided into four tetrarchies, but only into three. One was given by the Emperor Augustus to Archelaus, the second to Herod Antipas. That's our guy.
Yeah.
Okay. And the third to Philip. Okay. They're all three Herod the Great sons.
Okay.
Okay. Herod Antipas was not a king. He was just a Roman client ruler governing Galilee under Roman authority.
Sure.
Okay. So his title sounded bigger than it was. Okay. But that's what a tetrarch is. It's just a ruler.
Okay.
Like a governor kind of guy.
Sure.
Okay. Then we get to the part where he's like, whoa, this is John the Baptist risen from the dead. Whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah, that sounded very Jesus-y. Weird,
right?
Or something.
Well, he's hearing these rumors of Jesus, and he's like, fuck me. This must be this Jesus guy must be the reincarnation of John the Baptist, whom I've just had killed.
Hmm.
Okay?
That's how this was interpreted?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So there's a few things here, and I'm going to get into that in a minute, okay?
Sure.
More about I had John the Baptist killed.
Right.
There's a lot to that, and it's very interesting.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
But let's just talk about he is risen from the dead. Whoa. And it must be Jesus. I mean, sure. It must be John. This Jesus guy that I'm hearing about must be John.
Got it.
Okay?
Okay.
So from that statement itself, we can tell that the resurrection of the dead was a common opinion held among the Jews at that time. They just believed people.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Because of the phrasing, like, it's not a surprise that it's not a surprise that John the Baptist has risen from the dead or is reincarnating somebody.
Right.
That's not the surprise.
Sure.
The surprise is, God damn it. I'm being haunted by my guilt because I just had this guy killed and he's back to haunt me doing the same things that John the Baptist was doing. That's how I know it's John the Baptist.
Sure. But that line in there in John or in Matthew chapter 14 kind of undercuts a lot of the whole Jesus story.
It does, because they were already predisposed to believe that that kind of thing was commonplace.
Right. So that's interesting that it got. That it's in there.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, I guess they didn't really, when they wrote this initially, they didn't really know that Jesus was going to become the Jesus of Jesus.
Right.
You know, like this is a new thing. And so this wasn't really, this is just how it was seen back then.
Like to us, we're looking back thinking that that's the big deal. And for them, they're like, what? People rise all the time.
Yeah. Because silliness, because magic, because there was miracles in every corner.
Exactly. Jesus angels and demon, people healing. People getting raised from the dead. What? This is commonplace.
No big. Yeah. No, whatever.
And that's something that's easy to overlook unless you read the way it's phrased and you're like, oh, he wasn't upset about the fact that it was happening. He was upset about why it was happening.
Yeah.
And that's what I couldn't grasp.
No, that's really enlightening.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes. And when you find out like why he had John the Baptist killed and all of that, it makes it even more like it reads almost like a fucking Hamlet kind of Shakespearean thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, which I mean, that's probably where Shakespeare drew a lot of his inspiration.
Sure.
I would imagine. But ancient Jews held a variety of beliefs about resurrection, spirits, and holy men returning from the dead. So again, this shit was just everyday occurrences. Okay.
I feel like we missed some really important lead up in that 300 years that's missing between the Maccabees and this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The 400 like, years of silence.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cultural and change. There's a lot of cultural changes that have happened that this version of Judaism that's occurring during Jesus's time, their beliefs are so dramatically different than what they were during the Old Testament times.
Yes.
Right.
And we saw that it was starting to happen.
Sure.
But yeah, that 400 years of silence really fucked us historically as far as understanding how it changed.
Because it's a hard transition to, especially looking at it 2,000 years on.
Yeah.
It's a hard transition to go from the Old Testament to this and interpret it in a way that makes sense based on what was happening at the time, because you're talking about two dramatically different time periods, and you're also talking about much more modern and propagandized speech that's being used here versus what was being done before.
Yeah.
Not that it wasn't propaganda back then, too.
But it was different.
It was different.
It was different.
Yeah.
Who was saying it and why might have been equivalent, but not the same still. So yeah, it's just like there's so much to untangle here.
Yeah.
It's what I keep saying. It's really hard to read the New Testament in context of we've got how today is using it versus how Matthew was using it versus what might have actually been intended in the Bible versus what actually happened historically.
Sure.
Four different layers just makes it so difficult to untangle.
Right. But, you know, just take it on faith.
Yeah, sure, sure. So Matthew is portraying this whole event that he's writing about, you know, after Jesus's death, long after. He's portraying this as the guilty conscience of a man who knows he murdered a righteous prophet.
Okay.
All right. And again, I'm going to get into that murder of John the Baptist.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get the whole story. There's more historical relevance here, okay? And the ghost haunting Herod isn't literally John, it's Herod's guilt. And again, that's very Shakespearean, so Hamlet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I just, like, I got chills. I was like, oh, that's a great story, actually.
Yeah.
Like, Hamlet talking about the murder of his father and then going through everything that he goes through and having to, you know, face up to his uncle and his mom marrying his uncle. Like, that is so fucking, that's this story.
Right.
Like, I just get chills when I'm thinking about it. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. All right. And then we get the phrase, for Herodias' sake.
Okay.
And that's where some bitch, right, is dancing at his party, his birthday.
Right.
And for her sake, he has John's head brought in on a platter.
Right.
Okay. That's where I'm about to break this down.
Okay.
Okay? That's the story.
Okay.
That's what this chapter really hinges on.
Got it.
So Herodias was the daughter of Aristobulus and Bernice, which, who the fuck are those people? I don't know. But she was also the granddaughter of Herod the Great.
What?
Because, yeah.
This is, that, this got weird real quick.
This got weird real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she is one of Herod the Great's granddaughters. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, one of his daughters
had a child.
Had a child who had a child person. Who is Herodias.
Right.
Okay. And she, her first marriage was to brother Philip. Okay.
Okay. You said this is the original Herod's granddaughter.
Yes. Right?
So that means so that a child of Herod, which also.
No. A grandchild of Herod the Great.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
A child of Herod had this child, right?
Had what child?
The one that's dancing at the party.
No.
I thought you said it was the granddaughter of Herod the Great.
Yeah.
Okay, that would mean that a child of Herod the Great had this child. It's the child of a child.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Actually, Herodias wasn't the one dancing at the party. It was her daughter dancing at the party.
Oh.
So, great-granddaughter, Salome.
Okay.
So.
Okay. But very close relation.
Yes.
To this king person or whatever, yes. Whatever the fuck.
Yes. Philip and all of these three sons that got land from Herod the Great, those are all her uncles.
Yeah.
They're all three her uncles.
That's fucking weird.
Right?
Yeah.
So, she marries one of them, Philip. Okay, and that she had Salome. Okay, and that's why I was telling you it's not just name dropping. It's important that we understand these three brothers.
So she had a child with Philip.
With Philip,
which is this child that's dancing.
Yes,
and Philip is Herod the new tetra whatever the fuck he is.
Antipas.
And yeah, that's his brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not there yet.
Okay, this is a lot of incest.
This is a lot of incest.
So, yeah. Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about Herodias, okay?
Yeah.
Granddaughter of Herod the Great.
Sure.
She gets married to her uncle Philip, okay?
Yeah.
By choice or not, I don't know, but they have Salome, okay? Sometime after that, she leaves Philip. Fuck you, Philip, I'm out.
Okay.
Okay? And then she goes and lives publicly with Antipas, her brother-in-law and uncle.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who is, that's our guy. Okay.
Sure.
That's the main character
of
the
story. I got it.
And Antipas had been married at that time to the daughter of the king of Arabia, Petraea. Okay.
Okay.
He'd been married to his daughter, Aratus. Okay.
Okay.
This is kind of important because it's like a side note and it's interesting. So as soon as Aratus understood that, hold on.
Okay.
So Herod Antipas, who is the tetrarch.
Yes.
Right. He's married to this daughter of Eratos, king of Arabia.
Right.
Okay. Whatever her name is. Okay. Now, as soon as the king of Arabia, I'm just going to call him king of Arabia.
Yeah.
Okay. King of Arabia finds out that Herod Antipas is dumping his daughter. He's like, oh, hell no. And not only is he dumping her, his daughter, he's dumping her for his own grand niece, for his own niece.
Right.
Okay. He's like, you nasty. You a son of a bitch. You jilting my daughter like that. The king of Arabia is pissed.
Yeah.
Okay. He makes war on Herod eventually.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. And the two armies meet. And Herod gets cut to pieces. His army is done by the Arabians.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is believed to be a judgment of God on Herod Antipas, the Tetrarch, for the murder of John the Baptist.
Okay. But it's actually a judgment on his marrying choices.
Well, hold on.
I'm just saying.
Getting there. I'm getting there. Yeah. Yeah. And then a few years after that, just more side note that's just interesting. Not important, but interesting.
Right.
Herodias, you know, his niece.
Yeah.
Sister-in-law that he, you know, now is like, fuck you, Brother Philip. I like this woman who's my niece. Our niece, right? He's like, I love Herodias.
Sure.
Right? Herodias then pushes Antipas.
Yeah.
You know, our guy.
Yeah.
To seek a higher title from Rome, but it backfires spectacularly, and the empire then exiled Antipas to Gaul, which is modern-day France.
Okay.
So he made so many bad choices.
Sure.
Okay, that's extracurricular, that's outside the scope, that's all historical. Okay?
Okay. Well, you said he was exiled, but I thought he was killed in battle or something.
No, his armies.
Okay.
His armies got eviscerated.
All right.
By the king of Arabia's armies.
I got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway, let's go back, okay?
Yeah.
So, on Herod's birthday, Herod Antipas the Tetrarch.
Yes.
Our guy Herod. On Herod's birthday, the daughter of Herodias, Salome.
Yeah.
So, this would be Herod's... Herod Antipas the Tetrarch's great niece,
right,
and his sister-in-law's child, but now his wife's child, so sure. His stepdaughter.
Okay.
His great niece, stepdaughter, whatever. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Danced for the guests and pleased Herod so much. Leave to your imagination how that was.
Sure.
And that's a nasty.
Yeah.
Looking at your stepdaughter like that, you need to stop.
Right.
That he promised with an oath to give Salome the dancer,
yeah,
his stepdaughter slash great niece, whatever she asked for.
Yeah. Okay? And she asked for John the Baptist.
No, hold on, hold on.
Okay.
So let's talk about his birthday first.
All right.
Okay. His birthday was either the day he was born or the day he began to reign, because they call both of those birthdays.
Yeah.
Okay. Both were called that. So we don't know which one it was. It might have been his birthday. It might not have been.
Okay.
Okay. The kings of Persia, all of these guys, were accustomed to rejecting no petition requested of them during the entertainment. So a lot of times people would wait to the king's birthday party to make whatever request was most important to them, because it was that the king couldn't turn it down.
Okay.
So they would like hold it in their pocket, right?
Sure.
So, okay. Now, when Herod heard the news of Jesus's miracles at the beginning of the chapter, right?
Mm-hmm.
He fears that Jesus was really John, come back to life, and that supernatural powers were working in him, right? And then having mentioned John the Baptist's death, the writers, Matthew, of this book, right? Then they go back to record the events that led up to it. And you were like really confused about that.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Like, at the beginning of the chapter, it was like, this happened, and then Herod was like, fuck me, this Jesus guy I keep hearing about is John the Baptist, who I killed. What? And then it was like 3 weeks before, you know, and then it did rewind. At first were confused.
Right.
So I interpreted that correctly. That is what happened.
Okay.
They went back in time and were like, that was a flash forward. Now we're going to tell you how we got there.
Got it.
Okay. So John the Baptist publicly condemned Herod's marriage to his sister-in-law slash niece, Herodias.
Sure.
As grody as fuck and unlawful, unnatural, disgusting, and horrid. Any okay. chance he got, he was spouting off about, that ain't right. You are doing it wrong.
Got it.
You suck so much. Stop. Put your dick away. You nasty.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So Herod imprisoned John because John had accused him of adultery in marrying Herodias because yeah. Herodias had been the wife of Herod's brother, Philip.
Sure.
And you ain't supposed to do that. That's written, you know, right. that's in the Old Testament. That's in the first, that's in the Pentateuch. You ain't supposed to steal your brother's wife.
Well, to be fair, these these guys are Roman, so they're not necessarily Judaism.
That is true. That is true.
I don't know that for a fact, but like,
I will allow it.
Could be.
I will allow it. But still, he's like, I don't care. That's nasty.
Right.
You grody.
Yeah.
Especially because even before she's Philip's wife, she's y'all's niece.
Right.
Neither of you should be marrying her. God.
Problems all around.
Right. So the problem is that Herod, the Tetrarch, Antipas, mm-hmm. he both respected and feared John the Baptist because he knew that John was a godly man and also, additionally, that the accusations were actually fucking true.
Sure.
Okay? No amount of discussion with John could persuade Herod to conquer his passions and give up Herodias. He's like, that sweet pussy, though, I gotta have it. Okay? So, I mean, think about, like, how much he wanted her. He gave up the king of her Arabia's daughter for yeah. this woman.
Sure.
I don't know what was in his brain, but I think he was thinking with his wrong head.
I'm sure.
And that is nasty.
Yeah.
So John's place of imprisonment was probably the dungeon within Herod's palace.
Okay.
Because he sends him down. He sends his guys down there at the party.
Yeah.
To bring him the head.
Right.
In the middle of the party.
Right.
Right. So this gave Herod the opportunity to speak to him often. And so they kind of had a relationship. And that's how Herod knew he was a good guy. But he can't have somebody spouting off, you're nasty.
Sure.
In public.
Right.
Right. But this also made it easier for Herodias when an opportunity arose for her to get rid of John because John was embarrassing her.
Right.
I'm not a nasty hoe. Stop. She hated John for John's interference.
Right.
And she did not, you know, want the relationships of her past called out in public, true though they may be.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when she saw the chance to have him executed, she went for it. So Salome was dancing, right? Mm-hmm. And then so Herod was like, oh, you're so great. Give me whatever you wish for. You can have it. You want a new car? You want a computer? Free Netflix for 5 years? What do you want? What do you want? And
right.
She's like, let me go ask my mom. Hold on. And she goes and asks her mom. And her mom says, you know what I want. I want John the Baptist's head on a platter.
Sure.
And again, that's where that phrase comes from. So Salome tells Herod, oh, mom wants John's head on a platter. Sorry. Sorry. Okay. So there are stories claiming that when Herodias got John's head, when it was brought up on a platter to her,
yeah.
there's stories that she drew out the tongue and thrust it through with her hairpin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She was like, I hate this guy so much.
Yeah,
right. yeah. It wasn't enough that he got beheaded. It wasn't enough that he was jailed. It wasn't enough that he was beheaded then. And it wasn't enough that this was done in front of everybody. She had to further desecrate the body and stab his tongue.
Sure.
That nasty.
Yeah.
I love that story, though. Like, I want to see this movie. This movie would be so good.
Right.
So here's another thing that's really interesting to me. All of this that I've told you is recorded by other historians at the time.
Hmm.
So that's true. John the Baptist was actually a person who existed, and his death is one of the few gospel stories independently confirmed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this actually happened.
So it also lends some historical credibility to the Jesus story as far as Like, it's a good reason to have it in there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But again, they were like, yeah, everybody be raising up from the dead all the fucking time. Sure. Why is Jesus any different? I don't know. But that wasn't the surprising thing.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the question I have.
No, I mean, yeah. All I'm saying is that historically, it lends to the time. It lends to historical corroboration of these people at least existed. Which is probably in large part why a lot of historians agree that Jesus, he probably was existed.
Probably a guy.
Right.
Yeah. So the Jewish historian Flavius Josephus, which we have mentioned him before, he was, again, a Jewish historian.
Sure.
He also records John the Baptist's execution, but he gives a completely different reason. Josephus reports that Herod executed John because John had become politically dangerous. John the Baptist was attracting huge crowds with all of his chatter.
Okay.
And, you know, that's was happening.
Right.
And that does make sense. You know, Jesus came after and was doing the same fucking thing. And, you know, he got killed too.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So most historians think that it's probably a bit of both.
Sure.
Because the other, the incest and relationship stuff, that happened too.
I would tend to believe Josephus more than I would believe the Bible account because it was probably a mixture of what John the Baptist was saying about Herod.
Yeah.
Combined with the fact that he was executed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made the story become what it is.
Yeah.
Instead of being an actual account of what happened, because the chances of someone writing this that was there to witness this event happening are probably slim to none.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's conjecture based on events that they know could have transpired.
Yeah.
But the reality is probably something slightly different.
That was some of the stuff I was most excited to tell you about, though. And I know some of it was confusing, like the three brothers.
Yeah.
And who was who and how many Herods and what and which land.
Yes.
But you could see why I was like, no, we gotta get through this because it's important.
Sure.
It's such a good story, right?
Yeah.
So Matthew's story of all of this breaking down focuses on the dramatic personal story, whereas Josephus, his report, focuses on political reality.
Sure.
So we get a nice little collection of the two.
Yeah.
And that's why historians are like, bit of both, probably both.
Right.
All right. So now we can move on. We can leave John the Baptist behind.
Okay. All right.
So Jesus departs. He doesn't want to run afoul of Herod. He's like, peace, I'm out.
Okay. Sure.
We get his compassion for the multitude, and he distributes bread. A lot of the times, the numbers were supposed to be symbolic. Like, it wasn't actually, like, 5,000. That was just a nice round number. Like, they couldn't even count like that.
Sure.
They had no way to judge. Totally 5,000 people. Like,
okay.
So it was just like
a lot of people.
Scads of folks.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Also, with the 12 baskets of the leftovers.
Yeah.
That was almost for sure a tribute to the 12 tribes of Israel.
Sure. So, I think that was pretty.
Yeah. Pretty obvious. Yeah. Anytime you see a 12 in the Bible, you're like tribes of Israel.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's nothing to
almost
that.
Almost without fail, I would say. Yeah.
So the multitudes get fed, and then we get Jesus walking on the water. Okay.
Yeah.
And let us not forget that this was a big deal, not because he was super magic, but because he was taming, much like when he tamed the storm in previous chapters.
Yeah.
He is taming water as a natural phenomenon. He's taming the elements.
Right. And there is something extra special about water, even in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
There's like the whole Leviathan thing. And like there was a lot about water in the Old Testament.
It was scary to them.
Yeah.
Water was scary. And if you
Jonah.
Can, yeah.
I mean, like, and Jonah even pops up in Matthew.
Yes.
So, I mean, like,
being able to master the water means not just that you're magical, not just that you're powerful, you're a god because only gods can do that.
Right.
So that automatically raised him up in the people's eyes.
Sure.
If they could make that story stick. And they did. They did.
I mean,
2,000 years later, the story sticks.
They did, but
I'm not saying whether it happened or not. The story stuck.
Yeah.
It sadly.
Did. It did.
I hate that.
I just, there's so many clues that this is all BS.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So.
But there's also clues as to why the stories were told.
Yes. And I think that. I think, but the reason that the stories are told are more about politics, more about
the historical
the
context.
People that are involved. It's not about
sociology.
And, yeah, it's not about miracles and Jesus necessarily. It's about the times and what was happening. And these are the people that were involved in furthering this story.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily lend truth to it.
Right.
It's a story that got embellished, that got passed along and passed along. Yes. And passed along.
Exactly. Yeah, unfortunately, we're stuck with it today.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we're reading it, to find out the fuck.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So Jesus walks on water, he comforts his disciple, he heals the sick, and all of that happens.
Sure.
Okay, remember when he's walking on the water, and the dudes, they see him coming in the distance, and they're like, fuck me, what the fuck is that? It's a spirit.
Right.
Remember, I was like... spirit, like what?
Sure.
Like that's where you went? That's what you thought.
Right.
And we were like, what is that? But let us not forget, much like at the time people were rising from the dead on every street corner.
Yeah.
The spirits of the dead to them were also appearing on every street corner.
Oh, okay.
So the spirits would actually appear to them according to doctrine held by the people of that time. The Greek word is often translated as phantom, apparition, ghost. So that's why they said, is that a spirit over there?
Yeah.
They didn't necessarily mean, is that Jesus a spirit? They couldn't see who it was. It was dark and stormy.
There's something coming at them.
It's something coming at them in the dark, maybe glowing a little bit. Who knows? That's what they saw. They didn't know who or what it was.
Sure.
And they were like... scared.
That's all assuming that this actually happened.
Totally. No, I'm just telling you what the story means.
Right.
Not whether or not the story actually happened.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So they're out in a storm, it's dark, and someone appears out of nowhere walking on the sea. And so their first reaction is, excuse you, that should not exist. Let us hide. Oh, fuck, we're on a boat. We can't.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's nowhere to go.
Right.
So they assume that it's something supernatural. Along the lines of, what horrifying thing is coming towards us? It has to be a spirit.
Okay.
Right? Kind of like today, J.D. Vance says, oh, aliens must be demons.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Sure. Like, it must be some kind of evil, malevolent, scary, magical thing.
It's so
fake and stupid.
Well, yeah. I was going to say the fact that our vice president mentions the words demons at all.
Yes.
In a realistic sense of some type.
Horrifying and embarrassing?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Like, what the fuck?
I know I'm embarrassed.
Right. Yeah. Yes. As we all should be.
Yes.
But, you know, here we are.
So we had the question, these things keep happening, all this magic stuff. Why are the disciples shocked by every new miracle?
Yes. Why?
We were like, what the fuck?
Indeed.
So... it was probably literary license done on purpose.
No way. They use literary license in the Bible?
Yes.
What the fuck?
Matthew wasn't writing for history. Like, he wasn't being a record keeper. Like, remember, we've read some places where they were actually being record keepers, right?
Sure.
Particularly, I think it was 2 Maccabees.
Yeah.
Right? They're just trying to record the story as they saw it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
That's not Matthew's intention. And that's important to keep in mind.
Oh, he's spinning a fucking story.
Writing theology.
Yeah.
Yes. And so the disciples are being used repeatedly. They function as stand-ins for the audience.
Right.
So he talks about how stupid they are because, oh, look at those guys falling down again. They don't get it.
Sure.
Because it's convenient.
It's to show a point. It's to make a point.
It's a literary trick. So that's what's happening.
Got it.
Okay. So the issue wasn't necessarily a lack of evidence. It's that each miracle that occurs up until chapter 14... because we haven't got to the second feeding of the people yet. Okay,
yeah.
That's in the next chapter.
Okay.
Okay, so up until now, each miracle breaks a different category. Okay, so we've had magic people that, like, they could do this magic, and some other guy could do that magic, and some other guy could do these magics. Jesus is freaking them out because he can do all the magics. He not just heals somebody, he then also exorcises demons.
Right.
He then also feeds people. He then also walks on water.
Sure.
He's doing all the things, which, you know, magic can be found on every street corner, but
and apparently
you had specialists
granted to other people also, because he granted multiple magic powers to his apostles as well.
Yes.
Which, again,
and then we the never lack, heard the about lack that
of
again.
Historical data on any of this is just astounding to me.
Right.
And then also, you know, Simon called Peter couldn't walk on water very long. But yeah, he did, though.
He took like a few steps.
Maybe they just didn't understand their powers, you know?
Yeah.
Who fucking knows?
They didn't know how.
It all sounds like a lot of bullshit.
I mean, it is. But, you know, totally. That's, it is. I'm just bringing you, like, what this was about.
Yeah. No, okay? I got it.
Okay. So, their thinking is that just because God heals people through Jesus,
yeah,
which we've seen happen, quote unquote,
sure,
right?
Yeah,
that doesn't automatically mean therefore he can control the sea. So when they see Jesus, they're like, "Oh, he can do that and this? What the fuck?" And so that's supposed to be what that's about.
But
that's,
they already had an oh my God moment when he stopped the storm.
He stopped the storm, but he didn't walk on water.
Right. No, I got
this
it.
Time he walked on water.
Sure.
It's okay. Different. It's controlling the elements differently. Ancient peoples had high expectations, and they were very specific about what prophets could and could not do.
Okay.
And Jesus was not staying inside their box of understanding.
Got it.
He was like breaking down all the walls and doing his own thing. He just kept up in his game.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why they kept being surprised. Two reasons.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So then we get to, as you said, Peter can't walk on water.
Yeah.
He can, but then he doesn't.
Right.
Right. So Peter's failure is a little bit weirdly realistic in being included, because if Matthew was inventing propaganda, Peter is a very strange hero. One argument that Christian apologists would make is, why would the early church repeatedly embarrass its leading apostle if the stories were pure invention?
Sure.
Skeptics would respond, as your face is telling me, because flawed heroes make better teaching tools.
Well, yeah.
Duh. And right. Because yeah, Matthew's, we already know Matthew is using the apostles as tools and stooges for stand-ins for the audience.
Right. And I can already see the Sunday school lessons, right? Mm-hmm. If Peter fails, then it's okay that you fail.
Yeah.
You just have to keep
you
trying.
You have to keep trying.
You have to give you more faith, more, you know,
keep
love,
going.
Whatever.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Even though Peter failed, and even though he got called Satan, he kept coming. He kept going.
Sure.
He kept following Jesus. And right. That's the lesson. You just got to keep doing. And yeah, that's literally what that message was.
Sure.
So, I just hate it so much.
Yeah, no, I
hate
it
so fucking much.
Yeah.
All right. So then we had the big question. If the disciples saw miracles face to face in front of their fucking eyeballs, literally standing there, and they see magic happen right in front of them.
Yeah.
And they still doubted. Why should anyone 2,000 years later be a believer?
I think I specifically asked that.
You did.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is one of the strongest skeptical observations, particularly about this chapter.
Yeah.
This chapter does no favors for itself. Because
it really doesn't.
These folks are looking at magic and they're like, what's going to happen?
Well,
how will we ever get through this?
Yeah. And it diminishes the magic, right?
Yes.
Because what we've learned through studying, actually, no, what we've learned just through reading the Bible,
mm-hmm.
is that there's other miracles going on. hypothetically,
right. Yeah,
in this world that they exist in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but like even resurrection isn't surprising, apparently.
Yeah.
Right? Like these things are all in this chapter. And yeah. The fact that these are not, you know, amazing
to
the world at large.
And these guys are still like, how will we get through this?
Right.
I'm like, you yeah. live with magic every day. You know how.
So obviously what you're writing is fiction.
Right.
Not truth.
Right.
And that alone makes this just so unbelievable.
It makes our question matter even more.
Yeah.
You know, it makes like the fact that those guys thought resurrection happened all the time and they still doubted Jesus's abilities.
Right.
That makes them even more unbelievable.
Agreed.
So
agreed. Like, yeah.
I'm sorry. We could stop now, like, and I would feel comfortable, like, nope, Bible got nothing to offer me. We're not gonna do that. We're gonna keep reading.
Right, sure.
We have kept reading
past this point, chapter. We have to.
Right. I'm just saying, like, at this point, we've read enough of the Bible that I can confidently say there is nothing else past this chapter that is going to offer me anything, because right. we're done. The disciples were cooked, you know.
Yes,
like, I'm
yes.
sorry.
Right.
So anyway, the Gospels repeatedly portray eyewitnesses as very doubting. Like, we get John the Baptist questioning Jesus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We get the disciples panicking all the fucking time, tripping over themselves.
Right.
Peter sinks, right? Because right. he doubts, he sinks, right?
Yeah.
And the crowds keep demanding more and more signs, even though.
Right.
You know, like, we've seen signs. Show us more signs. Give us a sign. We need a sign. More signs. More signs. So, ironically, the Gospels themselves acknowledge that miracles do not automatically create belief.
Right.
Which I'm like, yeah, no shit. But
Christians don't admit that.
Christians won't admit that.
Right.
Right.
Even though it's in their book.
Yeah.
But, and that's, but okay.
That's crazy. Actually, we're the normal ones, you guys.
Yeah.
Because they saw the magic and they still doubted.
Right.
We don't see the magic. It's perfectly natural that we would doubt.
Right. And this goes to show,
it makes sense.
Can't you guys just be a little bit realistic about your beliefs? Right.
Right.
What is wrong with saying, okay, I mean, the Bible literally says this stuff.
The Bible, like, literally says, I can see why you would think that.
If you're a Christian and smoke screening yourself from the words that are in the Bible,
yeah,
you're doing this wrong, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's mm-hmm. just, that's my opinion. My opinion is that if you are not reading this and trying to interpret it and trying to ask the questions that we're asking, you're probably doing this wrong.
I think
right?
so.
Like, I don't have a problem with you having faith, right? People can have faith.
Sure.
And we have Christians that join us in Discord, mm-hmm. right? Like, which mm-hmm. I think is really awesome, actually.
I think it's awesome and interesting.
Yeah. And they're willing to
engage.
Try and engage their religion, even though
they don't mind asking the questions.
Right.
Which means that they're awesome people.
I will say this, as far as Christians that I have met in my life, the ones that I have met through our Discord
mm-hmm.
have been some of the strongest and most amazing ones that I've met
mm-hmm.
in my life. Because of what they're trying to do, because of what they're allowing themselves to question, because of how they're choosing to see their religion.
I feel like the believers in our Discord group are less specifically followers of the Bible and more spiritual in nature.
I agree with that.
Appreciate and respect that, because if I could believe that way, I do lean that way. I do. I'm an atheist. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe in magic.
Right.
But there is a part of me that does yearn for that spirituality.
Sure.
And so I have a deep reverence for people who have that spirituality.
Right.
And I appreciate it.
Which is why you have zero reverence for me.
Exactly. No, I revere you in other ways.
Right.
Because you're an awesome husband.
You're an awesome wife.
Oh, thank
Sorry,
you.
Sorry, that was...
The crowd was waiting for that.
Yeah, they were
waiting,
bated breath, yeah.
Anyways.
I realized, I was like, oh, I gotta
say that. Well, check
I
mean, the box.
You know, I don't gotta, but, you know, I did.
You did. I did say it. I know, and so. You know what? Sometimes you haven't. We're all growing here. Y'all, one time I cut a foot of hair off of, like, I cut my hair. I cut a foot of hair off.
This is true.
And it was a week before husband noticed.
This is true.
And let me rephrase that. Husband didn't notice. I pointed out, did you notice that I cut off a foot of my hair? And you were like, I guess it looks a little
somewhat
shorter.
Unobservant sometimes.
So unobservant.
Yeah.
No less loving for all of that.
Right.
And I love you. It doesn't take magic. That's all.
Right.
All right. So getting back to our big question here.
Yes.
Even within the story, people who supposedly witnessed miracles firsthand often remain unconvinced. Yeah. And that's what we're getting into in this chapter in particular.
Yes.
So a secular historian would generally say, no matter what actually happened back then, people in the ancient world were interpreting events through a supernatural framework.
Yeah.
Everything that they saw, they had to make sense in some way. How does the TV work? I don't know. Demons, you know?
Right.
And that worked for them.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
The historical possibilities usually considered are, there's 4 points here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One, the miracles happened exactly as reported. We can dismiss that.
Yeah.
Two, extraordinary events were later embellished.
Maybe. But doubting it.
Right. Like, it depends on what you mean by extraordinary.
Right.
Like, weird things do happen.
I have no doubt that Jesus probably drew large crowds.
Sure.
Right? He had a large following. And I bet he had some magical speaking ability.
I bet he could totally pull a quarter out of your ear.
Probably.
Just like your uncle. You know? Is that magic? No. It's awesome sleight of hand.
Right.
So,
but
I'm going to give him that ability.
But okay? even beyond that, my guess is that Jesus was just a good speaker. Mm-hmm. Who really, really charismatic. Really.
A charismatic speaker with great sleight of hand is where I'm leaning.
And continuing the brand that John the Baptist had already built, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Obviously, if John the Baptist is dead, probably a lot of his followers flocked to Jesus, right? Sure. So Jesus now has this large following of people who believe him.
Sure.
And what he tells them, right?
Right. Now, I am going to lean into just a little bit, okay? Just for the sake of being generous here. Weird things do sometimes happen that we don't understand.
Sure.
Like, for example, there are some places in the world where water, the whirlpool will flow the opposite direction than normally does,
right?
Now, we have come to learn the science behind that, but when this was first discovered, it was like a freakazoid. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What's wrong with this place? Demons, right?
Right.
So I understand they probably had so many weird things happening that they didn't understand that, yeah, I can see why they did think magic was real.
Sure. Now, I will say Neil deGrasse Tyson has one of my favorite quotes regarding this.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that God is an ever-receding pocket of scientific ignorance that gets smaller and smaller and smaller as time moves on.
I love that. It's so true.
It's perfect.
The more we understand, the less need we have for God.
Yeah.
Right. And at this point, I'm just more inclined to say weird things happen, and that's because we haven't figured out yet how it works.
Right.
You
and
know?
That's how I operate in the world.
And I think that that's exciting.
I do too.
I love learning and figuring out new stuff. I love humanity coming together to figure out new stuff. I think that's why you and I both, like, we love the space missions.
Yeah.
You know, because it is the whole world globally coming together to explore and to learn new stuff. So cool.
If I long for anything, it's for us to be a more scientifically minded society.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there is so much that we could aspire to be as humans mm-hmm. that we're missing out on by not focusing in that direction.
Imagine what we could accomplish if.
Yeah, know? Actually, I was having this conversation with one of our Patreon members the other day, and it was about, you know, think of all the money that has been spent on churches and all the things involved in that over the centuries. Yeah,
because he had just been to Europe and seen all of the churches over there. And he was like, man, the churches are gorgeous. And right. Just imagine now, all of the money spent on
I
those
think
things.
That those churches have something to lend to our society as well with history and
the story of our people.
Right.
You know?
But the sentiment isn't wrong. Like, no. We spent so many hundreds, thousands of years focusing on something other than science, mm-hmm. right? And even a lot of the early Christians spent a lot of time, you know, hiding scientific discoveries because it went counter to what their Christian beliefs were.
Right.
So it is a shame, in my opinion.
We could do and be so much better.
Even with the beautiful architecture.
Yep.
So.
Yep. All right. So we covered the first two points. Miracles happen exactly as they are reported. Yeah. Absolutely not.
Right.
Extraordinary events were later embellished. Maybe we'll give you a little bit. Where extraordinary means weird shit that you just didn't understand yet.
I'm going to go with a very small
chance. Being generous.
Yeah.
Being generous. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three, natural events were interpreted as supernatural, which that kind of leans into the extraordinary events. It's just things happened and you didn't know what the fuck you were talking about.
Is there another choice? Because I'm still not convinced here of any of these.
Number four, stories developed through oral tradition before being written down.
That's the one. That's the one I was looking for right there.
Yeah. I would suggest that there's probably a number five. Political propagandists added to it and made shit up to what was already being passed around.
Yeah. I mean, how many times throughout the Old Testament, right, that was there something that was heavily embellished mm-hmm. compared to the historical version of it?
Yes.
That was done for the reinforcement of the Jews' religious vigor at the time to enhance their love of their God, right?
Most recently, we see that in the way the same events were recorded in 1 Maccabees versus 2 Maccabees.
Oh, it's incredible. And I know that that's not canon for most Christians. It is for some, but not all.
But it's a great example, and it does
there is go literally to historicity. No God in 1 Maccabees.
Right.
But 2 Maccabees is all God. And it was written much later to inject that godliness mm-hmm. back into that book.
Exactly.
Which it's incredible to me that no one... it's just incredible to me that these things aren't discussed. Mm-hmm. It's such a large part of our society, and these things just aren't discussed at all.
One might say it's disgusting.
Sure.
You said they aren't
disgusting. I got it.
Yeah. So most secular historians would go with some combination of points 2 through 4.
Sure.
With miracles actually happening being discounted completely.
Obviously.
Yeah. But the key point here is that ancient people were not automatically gullible, and we shouldn't think of them that way. They just didn't know any better.
Sure.
And so that's hard to keep in mind.
Well, they didn't have a Google they could go and ask. They didn't have textbooks that they could consult. They didn't have teachers that thought different things.
You know? Their trusted leaders were telling them things.
Right. So, yeah. What else would they, you know, what... You're just going home to cook dinner for your kids, and like if somebody's telling you these things happen, and that's someone that you trust and maybe even admire, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So these people argued, doubted, they rejected prophets, they disagreed with miracle claims, a lot like people do today.
Yeah.
So back then wasn't much different from what we've got today.
Except that we don't have any current miracles that happen, so there's that.
Yeah.
We're just arguing over old miracle claims.
Exactly. So now we can move into chapter 15, okay?
Yeah.
All right. So that's the one where we get the washing of the hands and how that's not a big deal, right? Okay. We shouldn't wash hands.
Right.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. On the washing of hands, before and after particularly eating meat, the Jews had they laid great stress in how important this was.
Well, I imagine, because to me, like, they're handling dead meat, right?
Yeah.
And they don't like touching dead things, right? Right. So there's something symbolic with regard to that, because mm-hmm. they can't touch a dead body,
yeah.
right? So if you're touching a dead animal,
yeah.
in order to consume that meat, you would want to ritually clean yourself before and after.
Yeah, right? Not just wash your hands, ritually cleanse
right.
yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. They considered eating with unwashed hands to be not just an ordinary crime, but a somewhat extraordinary crime.
Sure.
So it would have been a big fucking deal that Jesus was like, yo, okay.
Well, imagine when they instituted that policy, right? How mm-hmm. many less sick people became? How much less people right. became sick?
Right.
So it probably dramatically changed their culture.
It did.
And so it did. That's why it was so instilled into people, like, yeah, continue doing this.
Now, here's something interesting. When they first were trying to induce people to actually follow through on this regularly
yeah.
before it became just a natural tradition.
Right.
They feigned that an evil spirit called Shipta would sit on the hands by night and had a right to sit on the food of anyone who eats without washing his hands and make it hurtful to him. So that person who hadn't washed their hands
yeah.
would then get sick.
Interesting.
Which goes towards what you just said, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because a lot of the quote unquote laws in the Old Testament mm-hmm. are based on practical reasons, ish.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
So it, not that the actual implementation of it is a practical reasoning, mm-hmm. but the reason behind it is practical.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So they would consider the person who undervalues this right to be no better than a heathen, and they would then excommunicate that person.
Wow.
Because.
Wow.
Yeah. You're not following this very spiritual rule based on the reasons that you gave, on top of the fact that you're inviting this demonic evil spirit in.
Okay.
So it was a big fucking deal for Jesus to be like, nah, it's cool. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you don't have to wash hands.
Right.
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 So then Jesus is like arguing with them. He gives them the yeah, but you.
Right.
Yeah. He's like, we don't wash our hands, but you don't take care of your parents.
Yeah, that's not a good reason to break a law.
No, it's not. I am going to talk about the law he was talking about, though.
Okay.
It is relevant.
All right.
He was saying, you accuse my disciples of transgressing against the traditions of the elders, because washing your hands before you eat was not specifically a law in the Pentateuch, okay. right?
All right.
It was a tradition of the elders from way back.
Okay.
Okay. Still, it yeah. was all but law,
sure.
right?
Sure.
He's saying, you're worried about traditions of the elders. I'm accusing you of transgressing the fucking commands of God and in favor of your own tradition, thus preferring the inventions of man to the actual precepts of God. Now, let's talk about what those laws of God were that he's talking about. The taking care of your parents thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I
mean, that's in the Ten Commandments, right?
It is. But what does he mean by it, though? Like, what do you mean they're not taking care of their parents?
Yeah, because he just told us earlier to ditch our parents.
Well, yeah. But
I'm just bringing that back up so we can remind ourselves there that, right. you know.
But he even called them hypocrites, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's from the Ten Commandments. Honor your father in Exodus 20 and right. then in Deuteronomy 5, honor your mother and father, right? Right.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 right? And then the treatment of servants and the penalties for acts of morality from Exodus and Leviticus. Anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death, and anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. Like, these sure, are big which deals.
Was when he told us to not.
Right.
You know.
Right.
That confused me. Because, yeah. you know, it's right there in the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
But whatever.
So, here's the thing. Jesus was breaking Jewish traditions, which is actually a much stronger objection than many Christians today would acknowledge. I mean, you and I have said, like, whoa, this is a big deal. What the fuck, Jesus?
Yeah.
And we're looking at Jesus all skeptical, and a lot of Christians wouldn't, right?
Well, because we're trying to take this at face value, right? Sure. We're like, okay,
sure,
this is God's book. Let's take God's book and say, okay, you say to do these things, and let's see how that pans out. It doesn't pan out very fucking well.
Right. We do need to keep in mind the dispute wasn't primarily about hygiene, because the Pharisees are asking why Jesus's disciples ignore the tradition of the elders, right?
Sure. An
oral body of interpretations that supplemented the written Torah.
Right.
Importantly, they're not accusing Jesus of violating one of the Ten Commandments.
Sure.
Whereas he is accusing them of that.
So he's accusing them of a higher crime.
Yes. And that's the big deal. Jesus responds by accusing them of elevating tradition above God's actual commands. His example involves something called korban, whereby a person could dedicate property to God and then claim that they were exempt from supporting their aging parents. They're like, I'm going to give this money, all my money that I have when I die.
Yeah.
It's going to God.
Okay.
Not taking care of my aging parents.
Ah.
It was a way of holding on to wealth and throwing your aging parents into a ditch.
Wow.
Yeah. So Jesus is arguing with the Pharisees here, you're using religious loopholes to avoid this specific fucking commandment to honor your father and mother.
Okay.
You're worried about fucking little hand washing rituals that are not a commandment while people are neglecting their parents and breaking God's actual Ten Commandment law.
You mean kind of like when he was doing that speech and like he ignored his mom and others and stuff?
Exactly.
I mean, he's doing.
Let me be clear. He's still pulling a yeah, but you. And he's still saying,
right.
Well, I mean, I was speeding, but like, you're doing heroin.
It just sounds to me like it's a bunch of people running around saying, well, I have a better reason.
Yeah.
Like, okay, great. That's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why you think you have a better reason, but apparently you really think you have a better reason. So, and that's all this sounds like to me.
No, it's so true. And like, what's really funny is if you study psychology, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of counseling, like therapy and stuff, they will say that when couples come in for counseling, that, you know, if your response to I have an issue with you is, yeah, well, I have an issue with you too.
Right.
Then you're supposed to like table the second complaint
and deal with the one.
Yeah. Like, okay, I hear you. That is a valid complaint that you're making. I see that you're frustrated with it. However, let's, you know, put a pin in that. I do want to talk about it, but let's address the first one first.
Right. It's natural for humans to do the yeah, but you, but it's not the most emotionally available.
It's not emotionally mature.
Right. Yeah.
And Jesus should know better.
Right. Son of God.
Yeah.
Dude is son of fucking God.
Like, I'm not saying that your accusation is wrong, Jesus. It sounds like you actually have a very fucking valid complaint.
Sure.
But the way this is being pitched at us is you're using their crimes to excuse yours.
Yeah.
Just because theirs is bigger than yours doesn't mean that yours are not criminal. Which is
immature as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I get that you're trying to teach us a lesson, but wrong lesson, because we are more emotionally mature than that. Psychology has come a long way.
Let me rephrase that. You're immature as fuck for someone who claims to be the son of God.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So he then starts talking to the multitude about religious extremism, the whole what goes into your mouth and what comes out, defiling, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So him saying what enters the mouth, that teaching was fucking explosive as hell. Okay.
Okay.
When Jesus says food doesn't make someone spiritually unclean.
Yeah.
He's undoing like
so much
years of ancient law.
Shellfish,
yeah,
bacon, I mean,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, I get what he's trying to say, but this goes back to when we first started this with Jesus coming in and being like, the rules don't matter. They don't matter. You're doing it wrong. Follow my rules. Like, no, the Jews literally got smited for picking up sticks on the wrong day.
Right. And Jesus himself said that we're going to continue to, you know, adhere to the old laws.
Yeah.
So, like, it's very, this is a very confusing message.
No, it totally is.
That's trying to be pushed here.
It totally is. So, ancient Jews would not have just shrugged this off. They would have been rightfully up in arms and like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's not Judaism.
Right.
Like, if you want to talk about shit, let's sit down and talk. But you got to come in understanding Jewish law and telling us that what enters our mouth, even if you think that we're being hypocritical by breaking other rules or that we're only giving it lip service, let's talk about the lip service. Not do away with the rule altogether.
But it strikes me that this is partly why he's not speaking to your normal everyday Jewish people.
Yeah.
Right? Like he even says, we're not talking to all these Jewish, like we want these other people.
The outsiders.
Right.
Yes.
So he's speaking to different crowds on purpose because he is
Trump speaking to rural Americans.
Yeah. He's going into the trailer parks. He's going into the, you know, whatever. And
he's just an early fucking Trump.
Grifting. That's exactly. I mean, like, the parallels of this are so
sickening and unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So food laws were a major marker of Jewish identity, as we know.
Yeah.
We've discussed them.
Right.
So this message would have been really revolutionary.
Yeah.
The people who thought it was cool would have been, like, wowed out at the audacity. Whereas the people who were true believers of Judaism would have been just appalled and like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
One reason scholars debate whether Jesus actually taught this exactly as presented is because it does create a bridge toward the later Gentile church.
Yeah.
Like Christianity and taking Christ as his body.
Yeah.
And his blood, you know,
right.
Like you take of the bread and the wine is the body and blood of Christ in communion.
And right? A lot of that break would have happened post Jesus's death.
Yes.
So.
And so Christianity loves to support this stuff because it conveniently supports the movement's expansion beyond Judaism.
Sure.
And like lends validity to their very exciting new little cult.
Right. Plus like, bacon.
Yeah. I mean, cult is better than yours. And we get to eat shrimp and bacon.
Right.
Sweet. Yeah.
Sometimes even together.
Yeah.
I mean.
Sure. Wrap that shrimp in bacon, baby.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole thing is so fucking gross. Sorry.
It just But not is. Shrimp and bacon.
No. Just the people and what they were doing and what Jesus was doing.
Sure.
Like, I don't find him innocent in all this. I think he was a very bad man with a very bad message.
No, I agree to an extent. Like, it's not that there hasn't been, it's not that there hasn't been good things he said, but he's also said some kind of shitty things too.
And any good thing that he said has been with an agenda.
And he's definitely a
rabble rouser.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for a reason. And I don't like it.
Right.
Matthew clearly wants readers to side with Jesus. Like,
right.
He's doing a shitty job, but he really wants you to.
I mean, you can say he's doing a shitty job, but turns out.
Well, if nobody reads the Bible, it doesn't matter how he writes, does it?
Right. Well, and that's the other thing, right? So we have this entire text that was written, but who would have been reading it? Not your normal everyday parishioners, even back then, right?
Right.
People didn't probably start reading the Bible on their own until many, many centuries later.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would have been after the Gutenberg Press was invented.
Right. You know? So, I mean, like, this is all going to be interpreted for their followers for many centuries before it ever goes to print to where other people can interpret this for themselves. And at that point, the legend of what Jesus is has already been instilled in society.
Well established.
And there's no need to go back and read it, right? Like, why would you go read the book of the movie you just saw?
No, it's so true. And moreover, they wouldn't have had a Google to talk about, like, these three brothers that were the son of, you know, Herod the Great, sure. and them interpreting or not inheriting the land and how that impacted where Jesus ended up being born.
Right.
You know, or how that impacted all of the babies being killed, or how that impacted, you know, why John the Baptist was killed.
Well, one of the most common arguments I get from apologists online is, how can so many people be wrong? Right. And my answer to that is ignorance, and not collective. You, not you specifically,
collective
right?
ignorance,
but ignorance over centuries that built this, this massive religion. And now we have collective ignorance through acceptance, right? Like this has been so accepted by society that there's no need to understand this religion anymore.
Because if you actually read all of this straight through as we're doing, and if you actually asked the questions that we're asking, and if you actually studied any of the history of the world that was happening at the time,
you could
not possibly walk away. You might still be spiritual, as many of our deconstructing Christian friends are.
But you would be changed.
You could not possibly take the Bible at its word and believe that it is the way it happened.
Right.
You could not possibly. I'm sorry.
Somebody's going to say that they did and didn't.
But they didn't, because they could not possibly.
Well, no,
read the Bible all the way through, as we're doing, asked the questions that we're asking,
right.
and studied history of the world as it was happening at that time, the geography, and
if
everything like that.
If they allow themselves to step away from their upbringing, if they allow themselves to step away from their taught version of the book.
Right.
Right. Like, there's ways to read this and just accept it on face value and skip
the shit. But then wouldn't be asking questions.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. That's
right. I understand. I was just clarifying a little bit, because there will be people that will say, I've read the whole Bible and I still think it's
And you haven't asked questions and you haven't done step three, which is learning the history of right. the time. No, so, no.
Absolutely.
If you do those three things, you cannot possibly believe that this is the way it unfolded.
Right.
And fuck you for being a liar saying you did. I'm sorry. I stand by that statement. And I'm the one that's more soft and leaning towards spirituality, and I'm saying that.
Sure.
Whereas husband is, you know, the kinder man, but he's the harder atheist saying, well, somebody might think that they did that.
We offset in odd ways.
We really do. We really, really do. Because to me, history and geography and politics and sociology and all of those things, those are actual phenomena that you can study.
Right.
Okay? Those matter.
Yeah.
Whereas spirituality is a feeling that has nothing to do with any one particular religion or religious text.
Yeah.
It's separate from that.
Right.
And that's how I can be firm on one and soft on the other.
Sure.
There. Anyways, Matthew is writing after the movement had already picked sides.
Yeah.
And so he's like, whatever.
I just to stipulate Matthew or whoever wrote Matthew, because it probably wasn't Matthew.
Yeah, no. He and his team, Matthew et al.
Right.
He's not a neutral reporter. He's an advocate. Again, he's creating a theology, and he's writing for a community that already believes that Jesus is the Messiah.
Sure.
So this narrative assumes that Jesus is correct.
Yeah.
And that is very frustrating.
Yeah.
His text is frustrating.
Yeah.
So we move on and we get the Canaanite woman asking favor for her daughter. My daughter's dying. Can you please save her?
Yes.
And Jesus is a complete racist asshole.
Yes, he is.
And here's some more interesting background around this interaction. We should note that Matthew uses Matthew or the writers.
Yeah.
They specifically chose to use a very deliberately archaic term by referring to the woman as a Canaanite woman.
Yeah.
And that's weird.
Right.
Because at this point, they no longer refer to their enemies as Canaanites.
Right.
So it was specifically used to evoke this traditional
Old Testament,
very old wound enemy.
Yeah.
This is an ancient foe.
Sure.
And that kind of leans toward this probably didn't happen and was more like just a story, bro.
That's actually an interesting observation from that. Like, yeah. I appreciate that because it lends to the story
the
aspect
literary
of this
aspect.
As opposed to the factual aspect.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Oh, no, he was racist, but it was for a literary reason. Hang on, let me explain it. Because by Jesus' day, there weren't any Canaanites in the old biblical sense, right? So why would Matthew choose this term,
right? Yeah.
Because Canaanites were Israel's ancient enemies. And as I said, to a Jewish audience, this woman represents the archetypal outsider.
Yeah.
She exemplifies. This is the ultimate outsider.
Well,
Matthew's whole thing this whole time has been all the outsiders get it, while his own disciples and the people following him,
yes,
they don't recognize who he is. He has to keep proving himself. They keep asking for signs. Whereas even this dog, even this ancient foe from afar, recognizes and has faith in him.
Wow.
It's so smart. I fucking hate it.
It's smart and shitty at the same time.
Yes.
Right?
Like, yes. It's insidious.
And the fact...
It's grotesque.
Just the fact that Jesus, the Son of God, is a racist fuck.
Yeah.
In this moment.
And he's using it.
Disgusting.
He's using racism to show even... Piece of shit, people get it, y'all.
Right. But the fact that that's even a thought in the New Testament.
Right.
Is disturbing to me.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So the shock of the story isn't merely that Jesus decides to help a foreigner.
Right.
Okay. Not the big deal.
Right.
It's that he helps someone symbolically associated with the people that Israel was once commanded by God to drive out of the land.
Yeah.
Murder all the Canaanites that you find. Get them out of here. If you see any of them, kill them.
So the mere act of helping this woman is an affront to the mainstay Judaism.
Yeah.
Whatever.
To the Jewish audience.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Moreover, it expands and supports the Christian movement that it would grow into. Judaism was just for the Israelites. Christianity is for the world.
Sure.
All the shits.
Right.
Even the dogs.
And at the time of Jesus, this group may not have been breaking away as much as is being portrayed in this book. Because
right.
There was the temple? There was a temple that got destroyed in 70.
Yeah.
Which is well after Jesus' death.
Yeah.
And this was written more than likely after that.
Yes.
And a lot of this is in reference to that time period, which was dramatically different because mm-hmm. of the happenings at the time than what was going on when Jesus was actually alive.
Exactly.
So it's interesting how this all kind of plays on it's just interesting.
It did add some flavor to it
though. Oh, absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
It makes the story even worse.
Yeah.
Actually.
It does. It does.
Not only was Jesus a racist fuck, he knew he was a racist fuck and was using that to make a point. And Matthew was using that to make a point for a movement.
It's really incredible to me how much I really hate this book and love hating it at the same time.
Yes.
It's just so, like, the whole Bible is so far, it's just been terrible after terrible after terrible.
Yep.
But here we are.
Here we are. Yeah. So ironically, this piece of shit person, this dog, right?
Right.
Ends up displaying more faith, persistence, and theological insight than many of Jesus's fellow Israelites.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
In literary terms, Matthew is setting up one of his favorite reversals, this whole literary thing that we keep circling around.
Yeah.
The insiders get it more than the outsider does. The insiders don't get it, but the outsider does.
You want to know my favorite bit? That woman put Jesus in his place.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn.
Yeah, we had questions about that, though.
Right.
Like, oh, what's that about?
Yeah.
So some Christians argue that Jesus was testing her faith. he'd already decided he was going to help her.
Bullshit.
No, I totally agree with you, right?
That is not how that read.
But that's how Christians will, they'll just reinterpret it however they fucking want.
All right.
Yeah, whatever. They'll just make up stuff that's not there. That there's nothing to support
that. Right, there's literally, yeah.
Because God knows everything. Jesus already knew her heart, you know? The exchange was merely there for a lesson for the disciples. But I think you and I decided already the exchange never fucking happened in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
But this is the common church explanation because the church is commonly asked about this specific. Jesus was racist. What the fuck? Like, apparently we're not the first to, like, realize that. Right. Which, like, makes me feel really good.
Sure.
But the church has an answer canned. Like, oh, no, he wasn't racist. He was using racism for a point. And it's like, but that means he was still racist.
Yeah.
The fact that he had a good reason for his racist statement doesn't make it better, guys. But they haven't thought that through. Yeah. Just the fact that the church already has an answer is like, oh, okay.
Well, and that's not even getting into the contradiction about, you know, God calling the Canaanites enemies of the Jews, and then now they're not. So,
but it wasn't one of the Ten Commandments, so I don't want to hear it.
But therein lies another contradiction.
Yep.
Right? Like, I mean,
Jesus changing, God changing his mind.
I don't even know if we're going to be able to do contradiction episodes in the New Testament because, like, it's so immense.
It's so immense that we would probably spend another year just going, like, verse by verse. This one, this one, this one.
I think maybe what we should do is pick out highlights for our contradiction episodes. Yeah. And then we have a whole contradiction resource on our website. We can just point people to that for the rest of them.
Yeah. Right?
Like, we'll share those links in the show notes after our contradiction. But we can do highlights. There's going to be a lot of fucking contradictions.
Really,
like,
rough.
I just, every chapter that we read, I'm like, oh my God, that's terrible. That's terrible. This is contradiction, contradiction, contradiction.
Because everything about Jesus is undoing the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Even as Christians claim that it supports it at the same time that they're like, no, but we don't need that anymore.
Right.
Whichever is more convenient on any given point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So many scholars think Jesus genuinely shared the common Jewish assumption that his mission was directed first and exclusively to Israel, right? And the woman challenges that assumption. And then after her response, Jesus helps her, right? That's what scholars think.
Yeah.
And this reading suggests the encounter expands the scope of the mission, right? Okay. But that's what progressive Christians favor. That's how they excuse this.
Yeah.
But, like, skeptics are like, nah, dog. Nah.
Well, I would argue that maybe even some evangelical churches are actually leaning into the racism aspect of
it. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Some of the harder core ones. Not directly.
Get thee behind me, you know. Satan, you Pharisee, you Canaanite.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see them,
so, you know, I mean,
doing that.
They don't, those churches wouldn't necessarily even have to come up with an excuse for what they said, you know?
No, they're excited about, oh, Jesus did a racism? Oh, sweet. That's awesome. Yeah.
And only when she begged at his feet did he relent.
He's like, you're still a dog, but I will give you my crumbs.
There's a way to make that sound really ugly. And, you know, like, why not read it that
way? Why not lean into it?
I'm not saying I agree with that, but, like, why wouldn't somebody read it that way?
Yeah.
You know, that's just as valid as anything else.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So, having brought up the Pharisees, it should be pointed out that clearly, as you and I have noticed, they were not the fucking villains that Christians often imagine them to be.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Popular culture has turned the term Pharisee into a synonym for hypocrite.
Sure.
But the Pharisees were arguably the most progressive Jewish movement of their day.
Well, yeah, the Sadducees were the ones that were like the establishment Jewish at that time. Mm-hmm. And the Pharisees were actually broken off from Judaism, much like the Jesus movement or whatever, Christianity movement. You know, like they were a separate group that was definitely challenging the establishment.
Sure. So. But not with Jesus, though.
Right.
Which is so interesting. We had all this infighting.
I feel like all this is competing sects of different breakaways from
the Jewish fight.
You know, main group, you know, like they're like, well, we're going to be more popular than you. So we're going to, you know, you guys are terrible. We're awesome.
Yeah.
again, totally. Marketing, right? Like this, some of this, a lot of this is just fucking marketing.
Yep.
And whatever.
Yeah. So the Pharisees believed in resurrection of the dead. They believed in angels. They believed in adapting Judaism to ordinary life, you know, finding those loopholes to, you know, make it work. Sure. Yeah. Right. And they believed in making religious knowledge available beyond just the priestly elite. So they were like your blue collar.
So there's a lot of similarities actually between the Pharisees and Jesus.
So they weren't just your HOA going around measuring grass and saying, Jesus, you're doing your hair's too long, get a haircut.
Right.
They were probably actually questioning like that. We like try to find loopholes, but even you're going way too far. Yeah. What are you doing?
You're breaking all the fucking laws.
You're breaking all the laws. We try to find ways to keep the laws as part of our culture.
Right. I would love to hear this time period written from the Pharisees' point of view.
Me too.
Right?
Like, me too.
I would love to hear that side of it.
Me too.
Especially, I wish there was a text that had them saying things about Jesus's group.
I know.
Like, that would be so amazing.
I would love to read that.
Right.
That would be fascinating.
I'm sure it does not exist, but
that's a crime. That's a crime against humanity.
Right. Yeah.
So many of the beliefs that later became mainstream Judaism actually came from the Pharisees.
Yeah.
Their traditions.
Okay.
Which I'm just like, yeah, that tracks.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Ironically, modern rabbinic Judaism is much closer to the Pharisees than to either the Sadducees or the Essenes.
Okay.
And we don't know a lot about the Sadducees or the Essenes beyond hearsay, like what we've picked up as we've gone through. But we're learning more about the Pharisees.
Well, it sounds to me much like there was a large cultural thing happening.
A shift.
Right? A shift.
Yes.
And the Pharisees and Jesus both were kind of filling gaps on that shift, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if the Pharisees are the main rabbinical movement at this point, then
I'm going to push back. I'm going to say that the Pharisees were not shifting. I'm going to say the Pharisees were following Jewish tradition and law as they saw.
They were, but they were a shift. The Sadducees were the traditional Jews at that time.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So they were a shift from what traditional Judaism was considered in that time period.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it. Okay.
So the Pharisees were breaking away from the main temple.
They were trying to lighten up Judaism a little bit to make it more livable, but not like hardcore.
Right. Yeah.
And Jesus was like, let's scrap the whole fucking thing.
And I know this because I was listening to that podcast that we had discussed in a previous Q&A or
that you still whatever. Can't remember what it is.
I linked it in in one of the previous episodes, but yes.
Good.
I can't remember now. Anyway,
got it.
It was a great resource. I will end up probably adding it to our resources on our website because I love having all the perspectives in our website because
information is good. And well, we should and all
I,
have.
I personally like having a good resource to go to when I have questions about things. And if it's on my own website that I've created, it's just that much easier for me.
Yeah.
And you all can access it too because I don't like to gatekeep either.
Because information is good and we should all have access to it.
I miss the old internet where everything was free and everything was just available.
And everybody was excited to like, oh my God, I found this cool website.
Yeah.
Have you seen?
Like, when I come up with something that I think is amazing, I want you all to see it, too.
That's so funny. This is so off topic. I love when your mom sends us really interesting links, but it's like an article from the New York Times or an article from the Atlantic. And one of the things me and you first do is go find a winky eye other way to read it.
Yes.
A way that maybe sails the seas.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, you know, we can still have the ability to have information because information should be available to everybody.
Yeah. And not everybody has the ability to pay for all of the things.
Right.
Sometimes. Right. Like us.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. Speaking of which, we do have a Patreon.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just going to, like, summarize here and then bring it home. We're almost done here. So many of the beliefs... Oh, I just said that. That became later mainstream Judaism, came from the Pharisees' traditions.
Yeah,
yeah. And that rabbinic Judaism is much closer to the Pharisees than any of the other groups.
Yep.
So Matthew depicts the Pharisees as these cartoonish villains.
Yeah.
But what's actually happening in reality was Jesus just arguing with his fellow Jewish teachers over how Judaism should be practiced.
Sure.
And that basically goes to what you said, which is just like... Mommy and daddy are fighting about how to do like the household bills and meal plan.
Right. But what sells better is this like enemy, good guys and enemy type thing, right?
Right.
That sells better.
Sure.
It's why Fox News has succeeded. It's why, you know, news has become more entertainment than it has been news.
If it bleeds, it leads.
It's always been something like along those lines, but it's become worse in our lifetime.
Well, it's got to bleed more because of the internet.
Right.
You've got to get your attention, you guys.
That being said, we don't even get sponsored by them, but Ground News is an awesome resource.
Yeah.
And I, you know, support your local NPR stations and PBS stations.
Absolutely.
Don't get your news from mainstream media because it's all entertainment at this point.
Yeah.
And why not support something that's actually doing journalism?
Get off Facebook, y'all.
I mean, yeah. Look, we're on Facebook. We're on all the things. You can find us anywhere. But yeah,
Let me rephrase that.
Only be on our Facebook.
Our platform is available for access on Facebook.
Correct.
You and I personally are not really on Facebook.
Right, right. Yeah.
That I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
I don't want to be accused of hypocrisy.
Sure. And that being said, I don't really participate much in the... social medias these days. I just don't have time I don't have time.
Nope. The best place to reach us is always in Discord.
Yep.
And if Patreon. And if you really want to interact with us, you should meet us at our live Discord every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
And with that, I think we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah. So that was our Q&A for chapters 14 and 15 of Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be back next time with
part 2 of our Q&A, which will cover Little Maddie chapter 16.
All right, we'll see you then.
Bye.
Hey wife, I guess that's the end.
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.